Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Broken Tree Ranch in Shingle Springs, California, you are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio in Studio B, live on blogtalkradio.com. Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're live here in Studio A. I forgot I had the B intro on there, but it's perfectly acceptable. And good to be here. And we have Cindy Sanson Braff with us, medium, psychic, entertainer. She's with us here this evening. Good to have you here, my dear.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, and we are going to be here on Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio talking about all sorts of things related to mediumship and things that Cindy is doing, and also some on-air readings, you know, for those of you that want to have an experience with Cindy and talk about all that kind of thing. I'll jump right briefly into just some of the – we had an exceptional show last night, and it was one of the ones that I think are going to stand out in my mind for a long time. Usually I don't do Saturday night shows, and we had a because of my recent Southwest tour, I had a lot of catch-up work here on the ranch, and so Thursday I didn't do my regular show, and I kind of postponed it till Saturday. Well, for whatever reason, that was supposed to be the way it worked, because we had the night of the television and radio personalities calling in for readings, and it was exceptional stuff.
Wow.
And if you don't get a chance to, if you get a chance, you know, pull that show down, because we went way over when the streaming ended. All three of the people who called in were all media people and actors, and they were all having various issues. And we were doing the on-air, what I do, call ITC, instrumental transcommunication work, and it was just an amazing, amazing show. I was stunned at some of the things that came out, and it seemed like everybody at the very end, when I put everybody on together, when we were on the off-air part of the show, they all sort of gelled, and these people are talking to each other on Facebook now, and we're all connected. So this show does some weird stuff, and sometimes you know, the other side has plans that we don't quite know what they're up to, but yesterday it was the night of the actors, so but you know it's and here we have another one, an entertainer, and I'll go ahead and get in here to Cindy's bio here now that we've got that out of the way. Cindy Sanson Braff is an entertainer, relationship coach, mystic. I've always wanted to be a mystic, so I've got one on the show now. professional tarot card reader, and I love tarot. I collect decks. And medium with more than 15 years' experience, she teaches spiritual workshops. Yeah, based on her book, Grant Me a Higher Love. And if you want to check her site out, it's www.grantmeahigherlove.com, and I'll post that in the chat room. She gives lectures in which she shares her own experiences of enlightenment and gives private tarot readings throughout the United States and around the world. And she's read cards at the New York Theosophical Society and at many corporate events, including those sponsored by Cablevision. And she has thousands of clients and many well-known celebrities amongst her biggest fans that can be heard on radio stations nationwide, including this one, and throughout Canada. And so, Cindy, welcome aboard for the second time with us.
Well, thank you. And it's funny because last night I was at the East Hampton in New York, the film festival. They have a Hampton Film Festival. So, of course, we were surrounded by the actors there, too. So I got to meet Isabella Rossellini, and she was a very fascinating woman to meet. And, you know, it's just, I think last night was the actor's night.
Yeah, that it was. It was so strange. I mean, yeah, I don't know how this works. I work with actually some personalities on the other side who are really very good people and just really care about us. But occasionally they'll have their own agenda, and they will do the darndest things. I'm still kind of amazed at some of the stuff that happens, and you just walk away with a smile going, wow. You know, I know this stuff inside out, I think, and then they do something new. And, yeah, so for you, too, it was that way.
And it's and fun, though. The spirit world, I always try to tell people, you know, sometimes some of the television shows will make it look like, oh, you don't want to try this at home. It's so scary, you know. I found, you know, those people that have crossed over really want us to have fun in life. They're fun. And they make our life more interesting and fun, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, you know, every time I've gone out on the world and done things like this paranormal tour and just thrown my trust to the wind, and I find that when I get out there, things just start falling into place and that a whole theme takes place and you feel very guided. So, yeah, you're right. And it
and
is
they're
about
very
fun.
Respectful. I find, you know, people say, oh, my God, you know, don't, you know, isn't it awful? They're always talking to you. I said, no, they're very respectful. They usually leave me alone, except when I'm working or if in my life I need guidance. But they, you know, they know you're tired and they know when it's time to, you know, back off and let you rest. So I find, you know, human beings sometimes, you know, you tell them you're tired and they still hammer at you and they don't leave you alone. Whereas the dead are very respectful of our need for rest. Sometimes they're the comforting voice who will tell you, you know, you're tired, you need to rest. So they're helpful, they're kind, and they do understand boundaries much more than human beings.
And you're talking about those who've really, you know, passed into full spirit, who are full,
right.
You know, fully crossed over. There are the earthbounds that we've run into, you know, that do get a little bit boundary challenged. I've had that experience. I woke up with my feet being grabbed one night last year, and that I ended up having to do some protection work on my home. But I know what you mean, though. The ones on the other side are incredibly
sensitive.
No, the
ones that have crossed over. But you're right. You know, it's funny because I haven't, you know, I communicate with poltergeist or people who haven't crossed over. Usually they're a little bit frightened. Maybe it's teenagers who have died of overdoses or in a car crash, and they're not sure they're dead. And they frighten me only because sometimes they're scared. You know, once I realize what I'm dealing with, I'm not scared, but once, you know, this show was scheduled for a while, and in all honesty, I have never seen a ghost until this week, and I know it has to do because this show was booked. So I not only saw one, I saw two, and
oh my.
I was driving with my daughter, and I thought I hit somebody. I mean, it looked like I was going to hit somebody who was running across the street, except, you know, nobody was there, and then it sort of disappeared, and then a second one came, and they were young teenagers, and, you know, funny, I didn't want to mention it to my daughter what I saw, and then later she was mentioning that some of the kids that were at the bus stop where she used to go to school, and that was the spot where I saw them, had died of overdoses recently. And I realized it was them. You know what I'm saying? So I actually saw it. It looked so much like a human. It would, you know, only point was that they disappeared, you know, sort of vanished. So I think it was the booking of the show, the universe said, okay, we're going to show you something because now you've opened a different vortex. So it was interesting this week for me.
You know, it's funny. One of my very first experiences of actually seeing a spirit was when I was about 18 or 19 years old. I was driving my dad's old Toyota. He was asleep in the seat next to me, and we were driving home from a town called Paradise, where we had a second home, back to Roseville, California. And we were just past Oroville, the town of Oroville, heading towards Marysville on, I think it's I-70. And we were, or Highway 70, excuse me. And we were heading south, and the next thing I know, I look up and I see an old Chinese man in the middle of the road. Now, this was a big, you know, California was full of Chinese workers.
Sure,
and, you know, Asian. Yeah, and they did a lot of agricultural work, too. And this guy was dressed, you know, in kind of old clothing, you know. It was kind of, it looked like stuff that, you know, you would see from China, you know, the stuff he was wearing. And he turned and looked directly at me, and I was doing 70 miles an hour and couldn't stop, and he was standing right where I was driving. And the next thing you know, I damn near wrecked the truck. I mean, I pulled hard right as I could, but I had a levee on the right side of me, and it was a straight drop down. And so I went as far to the right as I could, and the mirror, what I thought hit him, and I was completely freaked out. You know, this is not something that, you know,
right,
I didn't
course.
Know. And what, but the weirdest part was it sounded like paper tearing when I went through what I thought was his body. It sounded just like paper. And I, you know, I hit the brakes and slid the truck, you know, and of course my father's waking up going, what's wrong with you? And I get out of the truck and I'm looking around and I'm going, I hit somebody. I hit a guy and I'm looking for the body. And I was like, I was completely almost in tears. And there was nothing there. And you know,
it's funny that you had the same experience in a car. Jeremy saying that I had the same experience. And it was, you know, scary only because you think you're going to hit this thing. And then I just sort of vanished. And then when I saw the second one, I thought, wow, you know. And so I was like, okay. And, of course, it really does, you know, they were dressed like young boys, as you said, that, you know, you see them in the clothes. I mean, you actually see them wearing the garments. That's what's odd. It wasn't like seeing just like a vapor or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess, you know, that kind of being in the road is interesting that you saw it the same way.
Yeah, it turned out years later I found out that this was a rather common occurrence on that road, that there had been this gentleman sighted, and people had reported the same thing that I had. And when I wrote it, a friend of mine wrote it up after I wrote him a letter about it because I wanted to get his opinion on it, and he sort of, you know, put it out there without me really giving him permission. But the next thing I know, I was getting some confirmations that yes, indeed, this was a regular occurrence on that road. So, you know, people do see these things, and spirits do kind of just, you know, that are earthbound, seem to just walk around and do stuff like that, and they play on the highway. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because all of us have had dreams of being a poltergeist. I'm sure, you know, we've all had many lifetimes, and, you know, if we die suddenly, if we're on morphine when we die, we can also be a poltergeist. So the dreams that are our own dreams of being a poltergeist are the ones when, you know, we see people in our dreams, they're all out of time, they're wearing, you know, cowboy outfits, Indian outfits, Civil War, and we're trying to talk to them, but nobody's hearing us, and then we see, you know, the living people that we know, and nobody's hearing us, and yet we can't wake up. Have you ever had those dreams where you just can't wake up, but you, it, and when you wake up, you're so relieved? You know, that's a memory of when we have been poltergeist. It's not a pleasant thing to be. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm sure there, what's been channeled to me is there are some people that just don't want to cross over because they've had really bad lives. You know, they just don't want to, you know, face whatever they have to face. But other people just don't know that they're dead. And, you know, that's the kind of dreams that I've had. And, you know, we never want to be that. We want to make sure, you know, if you're dealing with someone who's dying, you know, both of my parents just recently died, and when I was with my mom toward the end of her death, you know, I was telling her it's okay to go and letting her know, because she had been on medication, although I had greatly made it much, much less. I'd weaned her off. Hospice had her on way too much medication. It's not good. You don't want to be like that, because then you can get lost in that poltergeist world. So I made sure she was pain-free, but she was not stoned. She wasn't out of it. And, you know, I knew that she crossed over very well. And so, you know, please, if you know, you're seeing someone who's dying, be sure to let them know what's happening. If they die near you, let them know they're gone, especially if they are on those meds, because you don't want them to get lost in that world.
You know, that's funny, because I had an experience with a very dear lady who was, when I was married, who was, you know, my wife's, you know, my ex-wife's, family, but she was dying of cancer, and they had her in basically, you know, just like what you were talking about with your mother. And I'd seen her like a week before she died, and she was looking pretty good. And then the difference in just a matter of a few days, when we came back to see her again, she was in the process of leaving. And I was like the second to the last person to ever speak to her. And my wife went out, and we had the kids, you know, and we had them waiting outside. And then the kid, she went to leave, and I said, I got to go back and just check something. So she took the kids out to the car, and I went in and told, you know, her name was Doris. And I told her, I said, you know, Doris, it's okay to go. And here's the kinds of things that are going to happen. And your husband's going to be with you. You know, he's waiting for you on the other side. And I told her everything that was going to happen. Now, this is before I really got into all this.
Right. You just got guided somehow to say those things.
Yep, exactly. It
her husband was probably talking to you, by the way, because dead people, what's been channeled to me is 20% of our thoughts are not our own. They do come from dead people and spirit guides. So you probably just heard him.
Yeah, I really felt guided to go do that, so I did. And it's, you know, it's been something that's happened to me repeatedly where I've had family members or close people that are in the process. Somehow I find myself in the center of their death and doing these things. And, you know, it's happened to me, I think, two times. I've had one other time in 2003 with a relative that was real close. And I was a central figure in that whole leaving, you know. And the same thing happened. I was basically guiding and actually helping the family who were watching all this and then helping him, too. But it was so funny because she saw her son last after me, and then she left the next morning.
Wow.
And I always felt like, that it was really a good thing that happened that
right.
way.
And
but
they
I
need to hear you say it's okay, you know. And, you know, the wonderful part about it is if they're not over-medicated, when my mother was over-medicated by hospice, and they did leave because she wasn't dying fast enough, and I couldn't wait to get them out of their house, to be honest with you, because I wanted her to have no pain, but I have a little thing. No pain, but we want our brain when we die. Do you know what I mean? You want to be able to experience the life review you're getting before you go. You want to make some amends. You want to say goodbye. And then the actual process of the week before she was dying, and my mother was always kind of a scoochy lady, she got really blissful and peaceful and filled with love and light and loved her room and the flowers and everything. And her dying week was very beautiful, so... You know, I think we've somehow gotten where we want, like, you know, with birth, remember that whole thing where, you know, they knock you out to give birth and then they knock you out to die. You know, giving birth can be a beautiful thing. You know, you don't necessarily want to have pain, so, you know, they can give you something as a pain if that's what you want. But why are we going through birth and death with, you know, not awareness? It's horrible. And it is what's causing, you know, the numbers of poltergeists to be walking on the earth. I mean, they're really, and it will probably increase until some awareness is made. You can't have people that drugged up at the end.
Yeah, I think that's the part that it's interesting to see some hospitals where I've been taking a more active role in that, and you know, bringing if not clergy, but the last one I was at in 2003 with my uncle Mike, they brought in a gal who did she was American Indian, and she was playing the flute and doing some different things to really kind of bring an atmosphere, but this was shortly before I got into the whole this whole arena myself. You know, in a much more direct way. And I suddenly found myself knowing things that I couldn't possibly know about what they were doing, the procedures they were doing, and I was being told what to say. And so it just was, you know, and I really had not, it was like a day before, I had no idea I was going to be in there and be part of that. But my folks who were in Hawaii at the time called me and asked me, would I go in their stead? So I said, sure, I'll do that. And it was my Uncle Mike. I mean, so I went there, and the next thing I knew, you know, the family was beside themselves and didn't know what was happening. And I found myself in between the hospital staff and them and Mike, who was in the process of leaving, and playing this role. And it was one of those beautiful things I've ever been part of, you know.
Okay, and that's what you can say that again to people. They don't have to think that people's death is ugly. I mean, I prayed, you know, said to God, you know, you have to just take her breath away, and pretty much that's what happened. It wasn't frightening. It wasn't scary. And, you know, we as human beings get a little frightened because now, remember, I have no hospice here. I have a living aid, and I have me visiting my mom. Mm-hmm. And around, you know, Wednesday, and she died on the Friday, I said, oh, God, I don't know. Maybe I should call the doctor. Maybe I should go to the hospital. Oh, my God, am I doing what's right? And you don't usually hear the direct voice of the power that be, God, whatever it is. But I did hear a very clear voice saying, what makes you think any person on earth knows how to help your mother die better than you do? Is she in pain? And I said, no. Is she of bliss? Does she look happy? And I said, yes. And they said, let her be. And so we as human beings sometimes panic and decide, oh, I can't have them die at home. I have to call the hospital. I have to go there. But that's when it becomes, you know, you're dealing with the hospital staff. You know, you're dealing with, you know, people who don't really make this a beautiful experience. So, you know, we are guided throughout it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like we're alone because there are spirits telling you what to do and, you know, what's going on, and you, the room gets filled with a lot of light, and beings are all there that love them, people that love them, and spirit guides. So, you know, sharing that, that death is not something that's really has to be frightening. And, you know, unfortunately, the day that was there was beautiful with my mom, and her name was Rejoice, but she wasn't a hospice nurse. So, of course, when I wasn't there when my mom died, and she mm-hmm. called me, and she was so upset, and I said, I'll be there. And when I went there, the police were already there, and they sort of covered her up. And, of course, I didn't want my mother's face covered, and I pulled it down, and I made Rejoice, who was so shaken, look at how well my mother looked. Look how well she was taken care of. Look how beautiful and peaceful she looked, so that Rejoice would not be traumatized. And once she did that and was holding my mom's hand, I saw her experience the beauty of the dying rather than, you know, the horror or whatever.
Yeah.
So it is important that we share that with people so that, you know, more people will probably opt to die at home or, you know, go back to the way it used to be. People did die in their homes more often than hospitals and hospice settings.
You know, it's funny because, I mean, I've watched just through my own father's experiences and, you know, and just as you, what you've been going through, you know, with what you went through with your mother. And I remember when you were on the show last, it was shortly before your mother passed.
Right, exactly.
And I remember, I remembered hearing of her passing, so, you know, not long after. And so I was just, you know, I actually said a few prayers for you.
Well, and you knew, and you knew that it was very hard for me because actually like 2 weeks before she died, I said, God, I know people, when they have a drawn-out death, they have karma, and they need, it's better what we suffer here than what we suffer up there. But I don't think my mother has anything else to learn from this experience, nor do I. You know, so
yeah.
It was the point where actually on like the Monday, I said to God, I expect my mother to be gone within 5 or 6 days, and she was gone on the fifth day.
Yeah, and you were,
you know,
yeah.
So I called it, too, that I had had enough, do you know what I mean, that I couldn't, she was wasting away, I couldn't bear to see it anymore. It was very painful.
Yeah.
And so we have more control over when we die. You know the stories where people say they waited round the clock for weeks with their mother, and as soon as they, you know, they had to go take a shower and go home and sleep, that's when the mother died. You know, of course, you know, a lot of mothers don't want us to see the moment they die. They want to protect us from that. And so that, you know, oftentimes people will wait till we're not there. And
yeah.
A lot of people are plagued with guilt about that, but I said a lot of mothers and fathers are very protective, even at the hour of their death. They don't want you to see that. They don't want you to feel helpless or feel like you have to do something. So, you know, we do have a little more say as to when we go or when someone we love can go. You know, if you're very honest with God and you say this is enough, pretty, but, and again, you know, sometimes, you know, watching death on television, it's like, you know, looks really scary, but for the most part, it's really, you just breathe in and you don't breathe out anymore. It can
be very,
you just go. And it's, I think all of us hearing that, you know, I know you, when I was growing up in the 50s and the 60s, you know, people didn't talk about dying very much, although they were, you know, in the shadow of World War II. I think all of us as children had a massive fear of dying. You know, it seemed like something nobody talks about, and maybe it's a topic that's important, that it's a part of life, and it's an important part of life, and it is a transition. And what you're saying, how you were guided through it, even when you were not aware. You don't have to be a person who talks to the dead. You don't have to be a person who's, you know, on a spiritual path. Just a human being will be guided through this.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was. It was just such a natural thing that happened. You know, because like when my Uncle Mike had mesothelioma, and what happened was when I got there, it was absolute chaos with what everybody was going through. And suddenly I found myself guided to talk to the sister who seemed to be the matriarch of the whole clan that was there from his side. And I walked over with her, and she started crying, and she was saying, "I don't know what's happening." And the next thing I know, out of my mouth, I'm saying stuff that, okay, here's the procedures they're doing. Here's why they're doing what they're doing. They're going to give him these medicines, and here's what's going to happen. He's going to slowly they're going to basically slip him in, like take him into the ocean, and then get him to a certain point where they hand him off to the other side. And then what will happen is they'll be there to help take him in. And here are the things that are going to happen then. And I'm just sitting there. And afterwards, my aunt, who had brought me over, you know, she was looking at me like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I'm going, "I have no idea, but I'm supposed to be doing it. So here I am," you know. And we went back in, and I did more of it. And it was really, really a great thing that happened. And I left about 10 minutes before he passed. All of a sudden, I knew it was my time to leave and let the family be there. And,
exactly.
You know, yeah, and it was my job was done.
Instinctively, they told you your work is done.
Yeah,
and you step away, and you know, all of us are very guided through these moments. So, if we let the fear pass, I remember around the Wednesday I was panicking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I was starting to get scared, and actually that night my mom came to me in spirit and said, "I'm okay," but I was getting that fear button, and if I had gone to the fear, I would have had her in the hospital dying, you know, an awful death the way my father died in the hospital, really awful. And, you know, we have to just override the fear and know that we'll be guided through it and honor someone's wish. If they want to die at home, let them.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember my uncle Jaffe. He was an old miner from Northern California, and he had terrible cancer. And it was so funny because he was dying, and this was in the late 60s. And as a little kid, I remember me and my sister went up to see him the last time, and they had put a shroud up because he looked really terrible. And so we could only see through the shroud, and he told us he loved us. And then he, yeah, as he was in the last week, he asked for a beer, and the nurses who were coming in absolutely forbid it. My mother finally jumped down their throats and said, "For God's sakes, the man has less than a week left. If he wants a beer, for God's sake, give him the bloody beer."
Exactly.
And so she went and bought him a six-pack, and he had his beers, and he was the happiest guy in the world. He'd had
and
his
that's
beers.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
It's like, why not let it be a party? He wanted to have a party on his way out, and it relaxed him. It made him feel still alive, you know, and probably the beer was better for him than all the medication they were giving him.
Yeah.
And so it's easing some of the pain and, you know, that's one thing that, you know, a lot of people have been telling me that they are really troubled by hospitals not, they're dying. Why do you not acknowledge that and let the person have what's making them happy? It's, seems like, you know, the Last Supper, you know, even if you're going, you know, going to get the electric chair, you get, you know, your Last Supper, you know, you get what your request is. And a lot of times, you know, they're insulting to these people as if they don't know what they want. And, you know, I just find, you know, with the hospital, they're in the business of dying and they don't really see it as a transition, as a beautiful experience. And, you know, I'm one of those women, you know, who even with childbirth had my daughter delivered by midwives because I didn't want it to be this horrible hospital thing and change the course of the world because, you know, doctors started realizing women want a more, you know, gentler birth here. Those are the things, you know, changing how we view these things so that they become natural and a part of, you know, living and dying in a much more humane way than a hospital does.
I
think that's something that people will be demanding. And I think hospices, you know, they mean well, but why in God's name do you stone? My mother was stoned. I mean, it was horrible. She wasn't even herself. She didn't know me. She was crying all day. She was, you know, quick, imagine if you're on 10 different, you know, drugs for pain, you're stoned. And if you're a person who's never been stoned, it was a scary experience for her.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, people are telling me with the hospice, you know, and when they couldn't really talk, the person couldn't talk anymore. And when I talk to those dead people, they're very angry when they cross over. They said, I got life review. I wanted to apologize to my children or my wife. I wanted to tell them things. And yet I was so stoned out, I couldn't. And that, you know, that had ruined what could have been a beautiful saying of goodbye and making amends. And, of course, because I talk to dead people, I say, it's not too late. I can deliver your messages now, which is comforting to them. But people do get life review when they're dying. You know, they get to see things they could have done differently, would have done differently. And they can share some of that with us. And
yeah. We
want to hear that. I mean, isn't it wonderful to hear someone make amends while they're still alive to you, if they have something to say or if you have something to say?
You know, that's so funny because one of the things that I'm very big on, given my father's situation, you know, and he had the stroke in 07, and we've been through just quite a ride. And you talked about karma, you know, and my father is paying a lot of karma right now for a lot of things, you know, this life and the past. And he just absolutely hates this because every time I get up in the morning or I see him, I'll take a moment and I'll say, hey, Dad, and he'll go, what? And I'll say, I love you, man. You know, and it just drives him batty. But, you know, I'd rather say it over and above board so that it's really stuck into his head that, you know, I got that down, that I care about him.
Exactly.
Than to leave it, you know. And a lot of people don't say I love you to the ones that mean the most to them.
And you so, know, you know. You have some heart, you know, sometimes we've had, you know, not the most perfect relationship with our parents. And if that's the case, it can be more difficult when they die than you realize if you don't make the amends. And so I always tell people, you may think you hate your dad or your mom, but once they cross over, you're going to fall into despair and depression that you didn't honor the fact that the four-year-old in you loves your parent. Yeah, the grown-up knows how flawed the parent was. The grown-up knows that some parents did unforgivable things, but the four-year-old inside of us doesn't know that. And
yeah.
So we need to honor the four-year-old who loves the parent. And, you know, what I had to do with my mom and my father, because there were many issues between us, I had to leave the grown-up outside the door. And when I went to visit my mom, I was 4 years old. Literally, I would act like a four-year-old. Hi, Mommy, I love you. Look so pretty, Mommy. Can I lie in the bed beside you, Mommy? I did what a four-year-old would do if their mother was dying. And it wasn't fake, and it wasn't, you know, phony. It was coming from a place of great love. And by the time she went, she was a mother who never said she loved me, was telling me how much she loved me, what a good daughter I was, and thanking me. So if you think you're going to, you know, hate your parents and you don't need to make these amends, you really do. And you can make some peace and, you know, we can put the judgments aside and we can put everything away. But, you know, it is part of children to love their parents no matter what. And,
yep,
you know, you're given that opportunity to tell him you love him. Does he tell you back yet?
What he'll do is he gets really ticked off because he can't speak very well, but he'll sit there and go, you know, and then I'll go, no, I want to hear it. And he'll go, argh. And then he'll finally say, all right, yeah, I love you. And then I'll say, I didn't hear you. And then he gets really mad. And it's just funny to watch. And sometimes he'll just look at me and go, you know, I'm not talking good today. You know. And I'll go, okay, so you're telling me you love me. Yes. Okay, I got it down. All right, I'll ask you again.
And it's good to hear that. I mean, it's a good thing. It makes amends. It makes, you know, the moments, you know, having those opportunities that we went. But if I had kept my mother with hospice, she did not recognize me sometimes. She was not able to communicate or say she loved me. So if I hadn't weaned her off the meds, I would have, you know, those last 6 months when she was under my care, I would have missed those moments when she would say, you know, I love you. I'm so glad you came to see me. Will you come again? I will miss you. I would have been deprived of that. And that's why, you know, I'm really advocating to people if you think, you know, the people are being over-medicated, speak up. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, speak up. If they knew you and now they don't know you, you know, there is too much meds going on there. And those, you know, those opportunities, and of course with your father, he has his long drawn out karma of dying, and better he have it here and make his amends. But you'll be the one who will probably say when it's enough as well. You know, you'll one day come to that conclusion that it's time for him to go. When you realize they've said what they needed to say, there's probably not much left for them here to do on Earth. They do get some good karma, you know, by having people paid to take care of them. You know, it puts food on people's table. You know, they do burn off some of it, but there is a point in which, you know, my mother was dying for 18 months. It was only when I really said, this is it, I've had it, that it happened. So it seems to be you will know the moment as well, when it's more merciful for have him to go than to stay here.
It's funny because when it happened with him, I had a, just like you had your moment where you heard a very clear answer back.
Mm-hmm.
We were going through just pure hell at the beginning because it was such a shock with everything that happened. And for 5 days, he didn't know his name.
Oh.
And he would come in and out. And I asked, got home one day, and I left Mom at the hospital, and she was staying there, and I was going to go back and get her. And I took a shower and was, you know, got out of the shower, and I was just sitting there thinking about the whole thing. And I finally said, What's the future? What's going to happen? And a voice very clearly said, you have 3 years.
Wow.
And after that, then things are going to be, you know, pretty much up to him as to what he's going to do. So we've just passed the 3-year mark. And what I've noticed has been, I have been seeing him periodically out of body.
Wow.
And I will look and see him as he was when he was the young engineer and scientist that I know him to be. You know, from way back, I mean, I would see him for an instant and then it would be gone. And I told Mom about it and she said, yeah, I think we're getting there. So, you know, I think he's kind of practicing out of body.
And you know, also because they do take them up there. You know, they're up there a lot. You know,
yeah.
Being in spirit, getting a lot of life review. You know, we all get life reviews, by the way, periodically, in which the universe decides that we're worth more, you know, here, you know, more dead than alive, more alive than dead. You know, give us reviews. With your father, from what's being channeled to me, is when he had his stroke, he got a long life review as to whether they should yank him up or keep him down here. And it seems mainly the decision was made for you so that you could make some peace with your dad. And that you could learn more about this whole experience and it would be very good for you. And he agreed to take on this suffering, your father. He could have called in his chips. He could have said, take me.
Yeah.
But he opted to stay here longer because, you know, whatever suffering we do here is easier than up there. If you're up there and he has to see all the pain he's caused you and he didn't make any amends for it, it would be much more painful for him than it is to have physical pain here and suffering.
Yeah.
So, you know, and from what I can tell now, he has had a recent life review again. And so, you know, it's more than coincidence this was scheduled and what I've been through. The universe is pretty much saying it could be soon, you know, any day soon. It's up to when you feel that you're ready as well, because, you know, you may need to hold on to him a little longer.
Yeah, I've kind of had a feel. I won't go into the date right off, but I kind of know about when this is going to happen, and I'm actually okay with when he's ready to go. You know, I can deal with it, and you know, I know that I feel that way now. But you know, when it happens, you know, I've talked to a lot of folks who've lost their parents, and it's a tough thing. You know. But, you know, I've seen enough of the other side. I understand it. You know, I mean, I do, you know, I'm in the process of, you know, my student mediumship, if you will, and understanding this and talking to, you know, dead folks and doing the things I do, just like you. And it's getting easier to deal with that, and I can imagine what it's going to be like. But until you go through it, you know, just like what you went through.
It's hard. It's very, you know what, it's funny because you know they've been dying and you're prepared for it, and yet there are still, you know, things you wish you could have done or did better or did differently, and in retrospect, you know, what could have been. But you do have, when they cross over and their egos are gone, they do love you purely, especially parents who maybe didn't love as well as they could have on Earth. They're the ones who come through with the most love when they want to talk to a child, you know, or they, so you know that you will have a continued relationship with him. They're up there also, you know, to guide us and help us. They, you know, and you will still be guiding your dad as you're going through your learning, your studying. They see what we learn, and, you know, it'll be a two-way street, and you'll probably just have this wave of love from them regardless. And the more peace we make, the more forgiveness we have in our heart now, the better that transition is made, the more healing we could do while they're still on Earth. You know, and of course the dead want us to remember the good, the bad, and the ugly. They certainly don't want us to make a saint out of them. So, you know, it's okay if even after they die we have unfinished business or anger issues. Sometimes people can only deal with some of their issues when their parents are gone. And so, you know, the relationship we have with people is immortal. It doesn't end just because, you know, they die or they leave us in any way. It's, there's still, like, soulful connections even between lovers when they separate. So, you know, that relationship will continue with your dad and will grow. And he'll probably be your greatest spirit guide up there. So why is he right?
I absolutely think you're right on. And I've been teasing him about it because you know, he's very much a real one of these people who's he was always grounded as a scientist. And he puts on a big front about how this is all BS, and he'll tell me that. And I tell him, well, Pop, when you get to the other side and you come through to see me, I just want to hear three words. You were right.
And those are the words that you're going to hear. And, and the parents sometimes who arrange for me, who've crossed over to do tarot readings for their children or whatever, they always come through to say, look, you know, I didn't believe this when I was on Earth, but I just think this is great. You know what I mean? But they do say, you know, I would have never approved of this when I was on Earth, or I wouldn't have believed it. And they have great fun with it. You know, they don't mind being proven wrong, most dead. You know, some, you know, dead people don't learn. They're going to, you know, I've talked to some that, you know, they're dead 30 years. They're still son of a bitches. You know, I don't know how you can resist, you know, any healing in 30 years. But they're important to talk to because those are usually the petty pedophiles or people who have really hurt people. Yeah. And I need to hear what they've done, and yet they don't really say they're sorry, and they don't really mean it at all when they say it. So, you know, some people are going to die and not change that much. Others die and almost immediately go, oh, my God, what have I done? You know, so, you know, your father is getting a lot of life review. He already knows a lot of what he thought is wrong, but you and I, and people who are on a spiritual search, have done a lot of rethinking, revamping our thoughts. We begin to realize 80% of our thoughts were nonsense and or errors in thinking. We start to correct them. But you know, when you go on this journey, there's a moment in which it's a Pandora's box. You know, once you start dismantling one of your false beliefs, your whole brain's going to fall down. So he almost can't let the whole thing fall down. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, so it's hard. You can't just tweak one thought. Say you didn't believe in an afterlife. Well, say you have an experience where you talk to a medium and they deliver a clear message from somebody you loved, and that changes everything you believed in. It can really be earth-shattering. So, you know, your dad is like my mom. They're resistant to have all of their false beliefs shattered. And, you know, the more that we do it, you know, there was a point where I, you know, started getting this experience of enlightenment, and it was pretty much this. You know, human beings have about 80% dysfunctional thoughts, and we're just going to dismantle every one of them. We're just going to show you what's wrong, and we're just going to, you know, show you a different way of looking at the world. And it took about 8 years of steady guidance. And there would be times when they said, no, you still had an error in thinking the situation, and I would say, no, I didn't. And they would work at me for like a week until I saw what it was. So imagine me already agreeing, okay, I'll go through this experience, but still resisting some of it. So you can picture people who've not been on this path. It's probably really hard to say, oh, my God, my basic framework, my basic thoughts were incorrect. So, you know, he may get to that moment where he, right before, it's usually right before they're going, maybe 5 or 6 days, that they do get blissful because their life review, as far as Earth is concerned or as much as can be done on Earth, is over. The worst of what they had to face is usually faced. And now they can cross over and say, okay, I can go now. Like, they're afraid, too. I mean, if you haven't learned much, you know, sometimes you're going to go over to God and God's going to just be really reaming you. Like, how could you live 90 years and not learn anything? I mean, so if they've gotten a few years of it here, they're ready to go over. So that's where your dad's at, you know. So
I just feel that we've got, it's a matter of months, you know, and I feel it'll be sudden. That's the thing I feel. And I'm ready, and my mother's been kind of, we've been talking, you know, and it's we just have that feeling that, you know, when it happens, it's going to be okay. But the thing is he's, I just see him, you know, kind of experimenting going out, you know. And that's the thing is I'm actually seeing it as a good thing, and I've completely come to terms with it. Mom is still a little bit on the fence with the whole thing, but she's coming around because my mother's also quite gifted, and she sees things and she experiences, you know, the other side too, and so she's coming around. But it's just going to be an interesting few months for us. But I'm so glad you came on because, I mean, you just made me see a whole point of this with his non-belief, you know, his disbelief in these things.
It's and really that's the whole point, the resistance.
Yeah.
And sometimes people resist. It's a free will universe. God can't force you to see things. And the funny part about, you know, life reviews is, you know, all of us have had many lifetimes, so, you know, we're pretty cocky. We thought we could fix everybody. And so, you know, some of the people we've met in this lifetime, parents, lovers, have been because we, in our life review, said to God, oh, this time I know how to fix them. And even though, you know, God kind of laughs at us because, you know, pretty much what's channeled to me is God says, look, I don't know how to fix these people. I give them one wake-up call, another. I give them a stroke. I make them healthy. I give them a good son. I give them a bad son. I give them a good wife. I give them a bad wife. I give them money. I take away money. I don't know how to wake them up. I don't know how to fix them. But you people will know how to fix everybody. And so if nothing else we're learning is, we can't change people and fix them. We can change ourselves, and indirectly they may come to some awarenesses or something. But, you know, you're not going to fix your dad. You know what I mean? This is just not going to happen. And, you know, if once we let go of that, it's kind of like, okay, and I'm just going to love him, like, and, you know, maybe take the time to tell him the good that he did and whatever. But that's the whole point, that we're going to, some of us resist any learning, even in the afterlife. God tries to tell us, you don't want to meet that person. And we'll go, yes, we do, because this time I know how to do it. And against the better judgments of our angels and guides who beg us not to meet these people. And then they'll give us contracts that says, okay, you can spend up to 5 years with this person, but if they do the same things they did in the last lifetime, we're expecting it, you're going to walk away, you're not going to be loyal to people that don't deserve your loyalty. And if you don't, we'll strike that person dead and get them out of your way. So we kind of are given the guidance, what we can do. But we've been resistant, too. You know, we're so sure we know. So it's not just your dad. It's all of us, you know, resisting to learn the lessons we have to learn. One of them is we really can't fix people, and we can't rescue them, and it's not our job to do that. And I think if nothing else, we older souls are very busy thinking we can rescue everybody. Until we go down like a sinking Titanic. So, you know, even people who think they've been martyrs, they've done everything right, they've been charitable, they've helped everybody, and God says, you know what, you were really a pain in the ass because, you know, nobody learned anything when you were here. You carried everybody's cross. You're like donkey people. You have 12 crosses on your back. I wished you would have collapsed, but no, you kept picking yourself up, picking everybody up, but you never got out of my way so that I could teach them. So sometimes we've just helped too much, and that's a hard life review for somebody. Sometimes they just don't want to hear that. they go running back down to earth. I'm not hearing that, you know, my drug addict son that I bailed out for 40 years, I did all wrong. I don't want to hear that. So, you know, we all have a lot of learning, a lot of resistance, but, you know, I'm sure you're going to have those moment, that moment where you're going to know that your dad really loves you, and that the moment we, they realize that you've helped them die,
yeah,
the moment they look at you and they are so grateful. My mother was always afraid of dying, by the way. That was her biggest fear.
Yeah.
And there was me with her to make her dying a very beautiful experience. So, you know, you're going to have that too, because your father does fear dying. You know, he has that fear right now.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm very aware of that.
And
yeah, absolutely.
And that part of it is because they fear their life of you. That's why he, the more that, you know, he can come to the understanding that the worst has been delivered already, and that he has, you know, a long time to process and learn, and that, you know, God is very patient with us. You know, if you can help him know it's okay to cross over and that God is pleased with him now, or that, you know, his suffering on earth has made amends for a lot of other things, it helps them too. They get it.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of basically talking to him at a higher level, higher self, you know,
sure,
and then praying and just really, you know, and it's more for me, you know. I mean, it sounds selfish, but it's really, that's what I need right now to get through it, because I've stayed around to make sure that this is all going to go well, you know. And I just feel like, I feel like what your story with when you were ready to let it go, and it changed because of that, your view, I think that's exactly, you know, I'm in that spot you were at. So, you know, I want this last Christmas to be really good. I think that's the part I want to just get through Christmas, and then after that, I'm kind of okay.
Right,
you know?
and that's a good thing, because for your mom, you know, like my father died on January 2nd of this year. He was very considerate not to die. When I went to visit him on Christmas and on, you know, Christmas Eve, I thought he was going to die. And he waited because he, till after the new year, to not taint the holidays. You know, who ever thinks about January 2nd? That's a dead day of the year. You know, you've been partying for 2 weeks or whatever. You know, people sleep through January 2nd. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
he picked probably the best day of the year, you know, to go. And so they are considerate, if they can help it, not to ruin the holidays, not to taint that. You know, his brother died on Christmas, you know, 10 years ago, and it tainted a lot of the holidays. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'm sure that was part of his thinking not to do it. And, you know, these are the things, and you know, you're saying I'm trying to talk to my father's higher self. Isn't it funny how we can talk to everybody's higher self, but we forget our parents have one?
Yeah.
Because we tend to see their lower self a lot of times, you know? So just that you're acknowledging he has a higher self is important. The problem is that their ego is really covered up a lot of it.
Yeah, he is one of the toughest personalities I've ever dealt with, and he's absolutely impossible in a lot of ways. But that, you know, when I get to the higher self stuff and I can look at it objectively and see why he's done what he's done and the life he's led, and it's been a good life. He's done a few things that are wrong, just like everybody. But this man, you know, is an extraordinary engineer and designer, and was saved so many lives with the kind of work he did.
Wow.
It's unreal. So he did great things. You know, he was part of the whole Apollo program.
Wow.
And did things that were insanely dangerous. And so I look at what he's been through, and the few things he did get wrong, I can look past that, because I look at the stuff he did right. You know,
and look at how much courage he had to do all these dangerous things, but he doesn't have the courage to say, I love you. You know, that's, and what my book is about is that loving well is the brave new world. We've been to the moon. We've done that. The brave new journey is one toward love. And that was the journey that your father was most resistant to. And, you know, that's not unusual. That's pretty much a lot of the consciousness of the world right now. So, you know, understanding that he had great courage in one sense and in other areas lacked. But, you know, that's human beings.
It's, you know, welcome to the party is my always thing, you know, the way I look at him. You know, I just see a human being that was imperfect. And, you know, and I've got my own imperfections just like everybody else. And, you know, so is my mother. It's just his time is right now. And, you know, I'm looking at it as objectively as I can. But, yeah, God, I'm so sorry I took over the whole show with my father's stuff. I'm
well,
sorry.
But you know what? I think really what was channeled to me today from your angels and guides is, this is a show that John needs. It's a show you need to tell your story. And the listeners out there, they need to hear it too. You know, we all have the same issues. We all have the same things. And we're all going to have to come to terms with letting go, you know, with doing as much healing as we can, why we're put in a position of, say, caring for a parent that, you know, maybe we had issues with, or what can be done here? How can we, you know, do this with grace and with love and, you know, realizing that it's all good and whatever happens to even accelerate his death, you know, in my mother's case, her aide, which was very good, had to take 3 weeks off because her grandson was born. So here comes in a life. And then the aide that came to take care of my mother was not very good, didn't turn her enough, move her enough, and greatly accelerated her death, like almost. And I knew when Rejoice had returned, I said, my mom's going to go. There's no turning back from here. And in, you know, it was hard to bear witness to this, but the point is sometimes it's all good. And if God took her, Rejoice away for those 3 weeks, it was to accelerate my mother's death. And so if sometimes things look like, you know, somebody's made a mistake, it should have been done differently, but it speeds it up. It is what it is. You know, I had asked for her to go soon, and it did help speed it all up in its own way. So, you know, the universe is kind, it's compassionate, you know, and we have to deal with this. And if we can see this as part of our journey, and, you know, everybody, you know, all of us have aging parents, you know, we have baby boomers.
Yeah.
This is, you know, something that's, you know, all surrounding us. And, you know, maybe as baby boomers, we have more say in it. And, you know, does your dad want to be at his home? Is that where he'd like to be?
Yeah, he's right where he needs to be. He wanted to be home. And it's so funny because I've been keeping a kind of a mental note of all the things that have happened.
Good.
Because, you know, I'm going to write a book about this whole experience, especially dealing with some of the paranormal aspects of having a stroke patient in the situation he's been in, because we've had so much help from the other side with him. So the title of the book is going to be called Together, Together, We Together, because that's all he could say when we had him in the hospital. He was just aware enough that he knew he could go anytime, and all he wanted the family together, and all he could say was, together, together, we together.
Wow.
And he wanted to bring us all in so we were all together and holding each other up. So that's the title of the book, and I've been just sketching notes, you know, and just kind of keeping it together, and I'm going to take it all the way from, you know, his days in the defense industry and the things he did, up through the stroke and then everything that happened after, and then talk very openly about the help we've had from the other side, because a lot of things have happened that have been just nothing short of miraculous, you know, things that just you look at and you go, how could that have been? But now I just accept it.
Right.
And I talk
and
to the side and go, okay.
They will help, you know, that's what they're there for. They're there to help and assist in every way. The more that we know that they can help, the more they will, because it is a free will universe. They can't really keep helping if we're not asking.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
I
ask.
And you have to ask. You have to say. And believe me, we're all, you know, the realization that happened to me when my mom was dying was nobody knows better than we do. Nobody. If we trust our instincts and our gut and we're guided, we're going to do better than anybody else could. And it almost stunned me, the beauty of my mother's death. It was beyond what could have been ever comprehended. When people go to see her house now, because we're selling it, they go in the room where she died and they go, oh my God, this room. There's something about this room. Like you could feel the love. Of course, I don't tell people she died in the room. They just feel this great light and love in the room.
Yeah.
So that's the point. We can make dying a beautiful experience. We can, you know, sometimes, you know, people who are holding on to the dead because they don't want to do the mourning, you know, the dying, they don't want to do the mourning. That's the hardest thing. We have to not be selfish either. We have to sometimes let go of people that we love so much. And, you know, we almost want to keep them alive no matter what because we don't want to do that mourning. You know, that's the hardest to say it's okay to go.
Yeah, that's where I think my mother is. Probably she's slowly gravitating to that point. I've been, you know, I'm at a place where I can see it more objectively now, but I think she's still kind of coming around that. And, you know, basically my role right after that will be support her and then help her get through that, you know. And then after that, it's, you know, it's, I'm going to be encouraging her with her artwork, and she's a great painter and very artistic and that kind of thing. So it's going to be a process, you know, just like what you've been through. It's a process, and you learn so much. The thing I'm going to talk about in the book is the first pages, I already have a pretty fair idea, because I'm going to talk about that this is all love from the very start to the very end, and how, you know, the act of the stroke itself was more about love than anything else, because, you know, everything from a wild ride to the hospital at 110 miles an hour with me, you know, desperately working to keep my father alive, with my mother doing CPR in the back, which happened.
Wow.
And we had, and everything that could have happened to keep us from getting him there alive, it was like God opened up that highway for us. And we had this CHP officer who was an amazing driver, and I was right behind him, sticking to him like glue. And we repeatedly avoided getting clobbered, getting him there. And we got him there with 2 minutes to spare, you know. I mean, and I hit a bump where my mother was trying to force his heart to start, and she hit him in the chest. And just as I had hit this bump, she would hit him one more time, and she was about ready to give up, and she hit him, and I hit a bump, and it gave her enough force that she literally started his heart. So we, you know, and she was working on it.
Your book, Bump in the Road, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, it was just insane, because, when we got there, the CHP officer asked me my name as we were getting him out, and I couldn't have told you if I was Christ or, you know, shot in a crap can. I didn't know who I was at that point. But it was just so amazing to me that so many forces all worked together.
And
to me it was a miracle. I mean, I experienced God at that point.
Did you notice that you stayed calm, and that you, like, when we start panicking, that's when the guidance won't come and we won't hear it. We need, under those circumstances, to stay calm, to listen, and be guided. Those people that survived the buildings that came down in 9/11, a lot of them said they heard the loudspeaker saying, you know, stay in the building, you're safe. And they heard a spirit guide or, you know, a dead grandmother saying, no, you're going to leave the building, you're going to go down this staircase, you're going to go slow, you can take the person to the left and the person to the right of you. You have plenty of time, don't run, go slowly. And when they got out of the building, it collapsed 20 seconds later. These people, you know, several people have told me the same story.
Yeah.
But they were guided calmly. If you start panicking, you're going to fall down the stairs. You know, you're never going to be able to do what you need to do. So it is really keeping our cool, staying calm in a crisis is probably the best thing you could do. You know, and you won't know your name. You know, it's not necessarily know your name. You just have to follow.
No, I was just better than that. By the time I got there, I do remember my mother, there was a scene in Top Gun. Remember when the movie Top Gun where...
Sure.
They were spinning out of control, and Goose is in the back going, this is not good. This is not good. Remember that?
Yes, of course.
My mother, that's all I could think of. I'm in the back. Your mom tells me, she goes, Johnny, his heart just stopped. Oh, my God, your father just died. And I'm going, oh, God. And she's driving, you know, I'm driving forward, and I said, just keep working on him. I'm going to get us there. And then she says, a little piece of her tuned into what I was saying. I'm up in the front, and I'm just going, I'm driving like a madman right behind the CHP, and I'm going, this is not good. This is not good. And that's all I could say all the way through Placerville. And I didn't remember that until she told me that, and I went, oh yeah, you're right. And I could, that's all I could see was this scene out of Top Gun where we were just, everything was spinning out of control. And so I think the other side was kind of helping me just deal with it while I was going through the, another part of me was focused completely on this crazy car ride we were on. And I literally was throwing them around in the back seat. Here she is working on him, and to save his life and her life and mine, I was happened to avoid cars that were trying to hit us because the CHP was, you know, blazing trail, and then people would cut in right behind him, and I'm the guy that the CHP was there for. And so it was insane. I never want to do that again. But
No. We don't want that again. Once in a lifetime for a car chase like that's enough, you know. Well, I know that I think someone wanted one reading or something because
I was just going to say that. You and I were on the same page there. We've got a gal named Kay Gallagher.
Sure.
I think wants to be on. So, Kay, I hope that you've been a real sweetheart to stay on there. So I just brought you on. Kay, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's all yours. You know, Cindy's here for you.
I mean, I have my own talk show and everything. And my dad is my favorite person of all. He's been gone quite a few years, and I was just wondering, what do you see, what does he have to say to me?
Well, first
of all, his name is Artie.
His name is what, Artie?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he's definitely resting in peace. The first card I got
I wouldn't doubt that. He's a good man.
Was a rest in peace card. He is across from the rest in peace card is him... a card that shows him and your mom and the happy family and the love. That was a very important part of his life.
That's correct.
And your mom is still with you?
No, mom is gone.
Because there's...
About 7, maybe going on to 8 years.
Because she's saying, he's saying that you had a good mother. Even though things weren't always perfect. They weren't always perfect, but she's a good mother. You know, he keeps saying that. He's proud of you, the way that you're supporting yourself and how strong you are.
Mm-hmm.
You had a relationship that wasn't very good?
Oh, no. Probably my relationship with my mom.
No, not with your mom, with a man or with a...
My dad, no.
Because he's talking about a situation that someone didn't play fair with you about?
No, I don't feel that at all, okay?
Not with your parents, not with them, with another person.
I don't understand that, okay?
He's if you talk, he'll probably make it clearer, but there's a situation that, you know, he was concerned with not that long ago, but you seem to have resolved it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I asked, who's he talking about?
He's talking about a situation with a person. It could have been...
But who is the person he's talking about?
I'm not sure. He's basically happy with the way you've resolved things. And, you know, he knows that you miss him very much, and he's okay, but... There's a situation, it could have been a work situation or something, but he's talking about...
No, I'm retired, so I don't work.
That with a person, is there a family member that there was some strain with? Because he's talking about you resolved it.
Well, I have I have more than one family member, but I have a controlling family member, that they like you to do what they want you to do.
And that's basically the one he's saying, resolve it.
No, I'm not saying it's one. I'm saying it's more than one, okay? I mean, for myself, I'm very strong in myself, and I feel like this is how I do shows on Block Talk Radio. I don't need anybody's okay. And my family members would like me to depend on them and to go with what they think.
Exactly, and he's saying to you, you're always very strong-willed, not everybody's going to like you, and that's okay.
Well, I didn't have that problem of not them liking me anymore. Maybe 10 years ago, yeah, but no, not anymore.
Good, that's exactly what makes him happy, that, you know, these people are not going to change, but you have become strong. Things are good here. You've got the Justice card. It's a good year ahead for you. Your dad doesn't worry about you. You seem to be a person he's not worried about. You know, you didn't give him a source of worry.
He lives with me.
At the end?
No, I got a feeling he lives with me.
Oh, now, watching over you.
No, not exactly watching over me, but, you know, see, for a lot of years, I went back and forth to work with my dad. He picked us up, my sister and I, every night, you know, and we had a strong vibe, you know. We talked about things, he told me how, and I was in management, I ran a drugstore. And he taught me how to be that I was there to do a job and not to please people. I mean, when he was alive, he taught me how to be. And what I learned from when he left and the company he basically ran, it went down in the dump. After he died, okay? It didn't work anymore, you know? And I just always feel like, but I wanted to hear him, anything else he might have had to say to me, because I just feel like I know this man. I follow the way he was. I love this man. I mean, I myself, this is in some way that the guy I love is completely different than him, but it's not a bad man. But I love who this man was, just my dad.
And again, he's not with the whole business going under afterwards. It's okay. Your dad's like okay about it. He was the person who always kept everything running. It was that he's very much wanting you to enjoy your life, not mourn for him too much.
I don't mourn for him.
Good.
I love who he is. I'm not going to say, you know.
He's gone. He's still with
who
you.
Who he was. No, I'm going to say who he is. And that's the thing that stands out with me about him, who he is. You know, even though he's gone, and he's been gone a good many years, you know, but I, myself, love who he is.
Exactly, and his spirit is very strong. He's a person who spent a lot of time looking at things. He observed things. I mean, his view of the world was very, it was good. I mean, the man's life review is very good. There's no doubt about that. He would like to come down and be with you more. You feel his presence there.
I know he's with me.
He's allowed to, because he's not, like when we were talking, John and I, you know, there's some people you would never want to allow back on Earth or whatever. This is a man who certainly can spend time with you, certainly does.
You know, people still ask about him and thinking he's alive today.
Who's still asking about him?
People do.
Because they missed him.
And he knew him.
He was a very fair man from what I could see in these cards. He was a very fair man, tended to try to see the good in people. He didn't always have the easiest life. I don't know if you know that about him.
Yeah, well, I know him quite well. Yeah.
I mean, you know, but he made the best of it. You know, he didn't make excuses for things. He became the best man he could.
He had more patience than Job.
Right, and his life called for it. I mean, he needed that patience. He needed, in some ways, he likes being where he is, guiding over, watching. He's with your moms, you know, often, but he has still a lot of work up there that he's doing. The man is busy. I mean, he seems to like to learn and grow. He is still learning and growing. He's a man that has a very kind spirit, but life wasn't always easy for him in the earlier years. And, you know, you... your sister, your mom. You have a brother? Because she's talking about a brother.
I have.
Okay.
I have, I come from a family of 8 kids. And there were 4 sisters and 4 brothers. And I have a sister who's gone. She's been gone maybe 13, 14 years. Maybe a little longer. I'm not very good on dates or anything or time. But she died some maybe 10 or 11 years after he died, you know. And
you know he wouldn't have been able to bear it. The one thing he was happy is that he didn't live to see his children die, any of them. I mean, that was...
Oh, that's only one. The rest of us are all alive.
Right.
You know, and everything. And he was a good person.
No, and he's, you know, one of your brothers was a concern for him a lot in life. I don't know if you know which one he's talking about, but
probably my mentally retarded brother.
Right, and it was hard for him to leave because, you know, he always wanted to take care of him. Where is that brother now? Because he seems to be concerned about him.
Oh, he's doing fine. He has a mental imbalance, Brother John. And he's in a home. It's not a big home. Maybe 3 more people, but he can't live with us because it's very hard. It's like for him to be a controlling, angry sometimes.
Right, and your father doesn't want him to live with you. That's the one thing he would not... I'm not sure what he told you on his deathbed, but he really doesn't want...
No, by then, John, when he was on his deathbed, John was very young, okay? And he had a hard time dealing with John because he always felt that John was that way because of him, because my dad drank. So he always felt like John's problem was because of him. But basically, you know, John, it wasn't dad, you know, or anything. It was just the way John was, you know, happened to be, you know, mentally.
Right, and he wouldn't want you to sacrifice your life for him. I was wondering why your father was apologetic. I mean, he did have some rough years, but he had a hard childhood. You know, he had a very hard childhood. And he had some major issues with your grandfather, his father. Do you know his grandfather? I mean, his father?
His father, yes. I do know his father. I mean, his father was controlling, you know, because I have experienced when I was a young kid to go to his dad's house, and my dad didn't like the way his dad treated us.
Not at all, and he's sorry about that. You know, his father was abusive of him, but he should have protected you from him.
No, I don't think you can protect anybody because, I mean, I, knowing my grandfather, my dad's dad, you know, he was a real Irishman. My dad was Irish. But he sang his way over on a boat to come to the U.S. And he helped pay the streets in Ohio, in Cincinnati, Ohio, along the river. I mean, the man worked hard, you know. And I don't ever feel like they didn't get along, but I don't, I never remember my dad ever downing his dad. You know?
No, he didn't, but what he's saying is, you know, forgive him for whatever he's done, but
I don't have anything to forgive him for because I think he was a beautiful man. He told me about things in life, and things didn't always work beautifully at home, but he was a good man.
He did love his family. And again, he's made some peace with his father because he did have major issues. And as far as your brother's going, he's saying we watch over him. Your dad's watching over.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt because I know I feel my dad a lot in my life. So.
And he has, you know, no wonder he's so busy. I didn't realize you had so many siblings because he's pretty busy up there.
You know what? That's what makes, you know, if you go back, I am 64 years old. I would call it 64 years young because I do not look 64 and I don't feel it, but he was such a honorable man, honorable, you know. And my mom, she had her times as she got older because she got dementia and everything. She had her hard times. My dad, he was in a coma for over a month before he died. You know, he didn't really know what was going on around him and everything. But, you know, and I just feel like, you know, I was lucky because I got to spend a lot of time with him, a lot of time. And my sister and I, Pat, we talk about that we were very lucky that we drove back and forth to work with him, home and to work and everything. So we were always been very happy to spend that special time with our dad.
And that's the point. And he's definitely resting in peace.
Oh, I believe that because I always feel, I know when he's around me, you know, and everything, because I've got a new, you know, he isn't that new, but I've got a new cat, and he's a Siamese, and I really feel like he picks him up. He knows he's here. He brings his energy into the room. And everything, so.
No, and that's wonderful. And, again, he's watching over John. He just wanted to tell you that because.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt.
Even when you're, you know, not there, he would never want you to now take the responsibility of John. He's too much for anybody, but he's very well watched over. And, you know, your dad's very, you know, he's glad he can still watch over him even though he's gone. You know, I think that gave him a lot of comfort.
I would like him to tell him to talk to John more.
John doesn't listen. John doesn't listen much, but he'll try. You hear your dad. John doesn't always hear.
Sometimes when John's asleep, if he just talked to him a little more, it would help John a lot.
I know, and to comfort him.
Well, I don't know comfort, but John's a strong-willed person. You somewhat said that, and he really is. But he needs that comfort because he really, being mentally retarded, he really never knew Dad, you know?
I know. But both your dad and your mom are busy up there. They do have their hands full sometimes, watching over everybody, keeping everybody safe. But you know, your dad.
I know he does his best.
He likes when you laugh. So, you know, he likes your laughter. You have a very, you know, a laugh that he used to enjoy in your smile. So,
well,
the more
I
you do that.
Enjoy him, you know. So, well, thank you.
Well, good
I
luck to you. And, John, I'm going to say goodnight to you now because in New York it's 12:30.
Yeah, I was just
going to. And California is like
24. I'm Eastern Standard Time, too.
Oh, you're in Eastern Standard. Oh, she's in Eastern Standard Time too. Okay, so yeah, we're late here. Again, when people cross over, they like to make some amends to people and, you know, explain some things. And I hear it over and over again from people that, you know, a lot of times they have a hard childhood. You know,
I myself too. I want to thank John and Kathy. They both are two terrific people, and I'm proud to know them. Not that I'm always looking on shows anymore. I don't always do.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny. It's weird how things happen here. While you two were reading, I was having a spirit named Dan come through. And I didn't know if it was for UK or what, but Christy in Florida, or FL Christy in the chat room, I'm sitting there and I'm writing his name down. I'm going, why am I getting Dan? Why is he being so insistent? And then, so while you two are talking and I'm listening, I'm going, I'm dealing with a spirit on the other side. He's going, you know, I want you to let him know I'm here. And I'm going, but for who? And it turned out it was for Christy. She popped up and then she mentioned Dan. And I'm going, that's what's going on. I had this Dan.
Well, now you know, well, it gets confusing sometimes when, you know, I do a tarot card party and I have like 12 people.
Yeah.
And I have to be make sure that Dan, I go, you can't, Dan can't start talking when it's three readings down. You know what I mean? You people have to stay like in line because otherwise, you know, a John will come through or a Jim or whatever. And, you know, I try to, you know, keep it outside because, you know, but they're anxious to talk, you know, and. And so again, you know, you picked up, and of course, because there's so much energy coming between all of us, that it would be hard to, you know, pick up who it was. But I'm glad you located it. Because sometimes all day I'll hear a name like Dan, say, all day, Dan, 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 who's Dan, who's Dan? And then the first person I'll read the next day will be, you know, it's for them. You know what I mean? So you will hear it, and it'll eventually find its way where it belongs.
Yeah. It was just, it just was, you know, one of these things that I seem to have a gift for is getting the names. I can pull the names right out. And many shows, you know, one after the other, I get these correct names. And so, yeah, the last two, I've been pulling in names that I don't know who they're attached to. And then that's the part of the lesson is just what you're talking about. I've got to kind of, you know, tell them, hey, you guys need to slow it down so I can get you pegged to the right person. But
right, and eventually
really,
you'll find it, but it's like you got to like kind of wait till your turn.
Yeah, because, you know, it's weird. But
well,
hey,
good night, and I hope in the future to be on your show again. I love your show, and I put it on. You know, my clients, I let them know about it because a lot of them are into the paranormal. You know, really a lot. So, you know, you're getting some new listeners as well.
Okay, well, thank you, and yeah, you know, you're a favorite here, so we'll definitely have you back here, and you know, I'll set some time with you, and we can talk about it here in the future, and
great.
Have you on again. Yeah,
great.
But thank you so much,
thank you so much.
Helped me a bunch.
Bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye. And that was Cindy Sansom Breath. She's an amazing medium, a great friend, and a very good tarot card reader, so definitely check out her site, Grant Me a Higher Love. We've got about 3 minutes left, and F.L. Christie, Dan is your son. I was just getting this Dan name. It was just, like, coming through crazy. It was just I didn't know where to fit it, but thank God you mentioned that. But I've got After Dark Radio. Oh, Mother Jerry says, yes. Okay, Mother Jerry, when we want to have the coffee reading, yep, I'll get in touch with you. I've got that down. But we've got Anthea from After Dark Radio, Brian Watley, good to see you, Dominica. I saw that, and I'm working on the evidence. I've got it. So I've got 14 gigs worth of Southwest evidence to go through. And then F.L. Christie, hello. Gerber Daisy TM, we have guests 7407 and 8139 from France. And let's see, we have Iowa Trooper. Hi, hello. That's a new name. Karen Stream, GRI, Phoenix. She's out there and making things happen. And a big hug to you, dear. Mark Baroni, good to see you. We have Mother Jerry, who just popped me a message here. Ms. Ghosts, hello. Big hug to you out there in Michigan. Quinny Poo, we love you. And everybody say a prayer for Quinny. She has a sinus problem going on, and it got a little bit more into her. So if we could all say a prayer for this lady. She needs a little bit extra help from us. So, you know, we love her to death, and she's the best. And then we got Scott Weiss from GHI, Mr. Beermeister himself is with us. Ghost Hunters Incorporated, check out their website, and they have a show here on Blog Talk also. And then my friend Thomas, TKL Star, who is an actor out in Canada, and I think it's Toronto, I think, is where he's from. So, and I'm going to be in touch with him because we had an extraordinary show last night. So anyway, we've got about 30 seconds left. Want to tell you guys we'll be on again here later in the week. It'll be Thursday night. I'll be on Kathy's Distant Echoes. And then I'll have my regular edition of Soul Stream where we do our readings on air and help you guys out. So with that said, this is Ghost Writer Paranormal Radio. We're going to go ahead and sign off, and we'll take it right to the end without any music because we're just going to do it that way. So here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're all streamed. Bye. And that's it for us. So, again, thanks, everybody. This is Ghost Writer Paranormal Radio signing off tonight. And we have had an extraordinary show, and Cindy Sampson Braff was with us, and I learn a lot every time I'm on one of these. So see you guys later, and take care. Bye now.